Hi, and welcome to the Finally Pregnant podcast, the podcast for people who are finally pregnant after infertility and loss. I'm your host, Kat Strawbridge, and after almost 7 years trying with multiple rounds of fertility treatment, which sadly included pregnancy loss, last year I was finally pregnant, and now I'm finally parenting my gorgeous daughter, Ren. I'm delighted to say that this podcast is sponsored by Peanut. Peanut is the app that helps you meet like-minded women who are trying to conceive, pregnant, or already mums. Peanut provides a safe space for women to build friendships, ask questions, and find support. Introducing you to women nearby who are at a similar stage in their journey, Peanut provides access to a community of women who are there to listen, share information, and offer valuable advice. Whether it's understanding IVF, PCOS, miscarriage, or pregnancy and beyond, Peanut is a place to connect with women who understand. I used to go to a weekly rhyme time class with Ren, and between the babies crying, the toddlers singing, and all the general noise and shenanigans, it could be really hard to stop and chat to some of the other mums. So when one of them connected with me on Peanut, it was fab. We made a beeline for each other at the next class and even went for a coffee together afterwards. Because of the app, it meant there was a friendly face in the room, which I have to say was just really lovely. You can download the app for free today. Head to peanut.app.link/finallypregnant or search for Peanut in your app store. And when you do, make sure you head over to the Finally Pregnant group. Hello there, how are you doing? I am recording this pre-Christmas. So as much as I would love to say right now that we have had a wonderful Christmas, I would feel a bit like a fraud. However, I know that you are listening to it post-Christmas. So you have had, hopefully, a wonderful Christmas. I really, really hope that that is the case. And I hope that we have too, actually, as well. Fingers crossed. I promise to report back on ours in the next episode. What has happened since we last spoke is the Coping with an Anxious Pregnancy workshop. And it was a really great session with just the most special group of women. And I know and hope that loads came from it. And thank you so much if you came along. And thank you so much for all the incredible feedback as well. It's so important for me to hear that it is, because it means so much to me. And also from a personal point of view, it means so much that, you know, like several years of heartbreak and trauma has now, I guess, been turned into something more positive. And I'm using, you know, my own experience and so much that I've learned from other people to help you when you're going through your pregnancies and beyond. So yeah, it means so, so much to me. So thank you so much. And as far as the feedback is concerned, please keep it coming, because I learn so much from it as well. You know, I'm not going to nail it. I'm not going to get it right every single time. And even if I did, there's probably other stuff that I could have included. So please, please keep that feedback coming about everything all the time. Honestly, I'm an open book. One of the other ways, that I use mine and other people's experiences to support you guys is through my membership, The Hangout. And if you are into making New Year's resolutions, you might not be, then perhaps consider joining the community and finding the support that you need, one of those resolutions. You know, I reference my episode with Julianne from Parenthood in Mind in today's episode, as it happens, because those layers of support that we need are so important. And having that community and those regular opportunities to check in and feel heard, which you get at The Hangout, plus loads, loads more, that is all part of the layers. That is kind of one of the layers that you need, as well as the medical, as well as the physical, as well as, you know, all different bits and pieces. Speaking of the physical movement during pregnancy, and also kind of physical, but not necessarily, the connection to your little one is another area that needs support and is so important. And you definitely get that through our wonderful yoga sessions courses. Now, I mentioned previously that the first January course sold out in record time, but I released new dates for a Monday night January course a little while ago. Now, at the time of recording, it was 2/3 full, and that happened pretty much within 24 hours of it going live, which is nuts. So I can't guarantee that there will be any spaces left. But if you are interested in joining a 4-week online pregnancy yoga course, and it includes amazing affirmations and themes, and the teachers are just beautiful, they're just really, really special women, then head over to catstrawbridge.com/events if you want to find out more. And if you have missed out on the January one, there is always February. So, you know, get booking. If you are trying to conceive, because I know people listen to this podcast at all different stages of their fertility journeys, then I really hope that you've had a chance to check out the Kat and Alice Live Your Life virtual event, which we launched earlier this month. It's happening on Saturday, the 30th of January, and it is truly an event not to be missed. And even if you have a little one, you can come, like, that's okay. Whether you are trying for a second or you simply know that you identify with this community and want to be part of that space, you are so welcome. If you know what it feels like to long to hold your baby in your arms and it hasn't, or it didn't happen as quickly and as straightforwardly as you might have hoped, you belong, okay? That is the important thing here. This is your community, so you can come. So you should be there. Head over to catandalice.com and do it before the end of the year. So this goes out on a Wednesday. It's New Year's Eve tomorrow. You've got 2 days, if you're listening to this, when it goes live, because you can still grab the earlier bird price. And it is £32 for a jam-packed full day. But that does go up. Not loads. It's still really affordable on the 1st of January. For now, though, enough of all of that. It's over to my chat with the absolute powerhouse that is Mel Johnson, aka The Stork and I. Mel shares her story of becoming a solo mum with me today, the decision-making, the support, the highlights, the challenges. And she also talks a little about the support that she now offers women following in her footsteps. All the links to contact her and find out more are in the show notes. But for now, I just really, really hope that you enjoy our chat and that you get loads from it. And I want to send you so much love, and I am wishing you a 2021 full of love, full of health, happiness, and more people and hugs and that kind of thing. Because let's hope that 2021 is a phenomenal year. Take care. Bye-bye. Hi there, Mel. How are you doing?
I'm so good, thank you. How are you?
Oh, I'm really well, thank you. And I just want to say a huge thank you, because we have moved this, haven't we? A few times, actually, because we were supposed to be chatting, gosh, a year or so ago, weren't we? And lockdown, COVID, all of that. But I am delighted to be sat here now with you, virtually speaking. I would love for you to tell the listeners a little bit about yourself, if you wouldn't mind.
Sure. So my name's Mel. I'm 42. I have a nearly 3-year-old daughter, Daisy, that I had on my own using IVF with donor sperm. So I was 36. I was living in Budapest. I'd lived in Joburg for a few years, and then moved. I'd lived in Mumbai for a year before that, and then I moved to Budapest. I was living an amazing life, honestly. Like, I'm not going to lie. I was, you know, traveling the world, meeting people, having amazing adventures. But at the back of my mind, always, I started to feel anxious that I was going to miss out on motherhood because I was single. I'd briefly dated throughout that time, but no one serious that I would think about settling down with. And as you start to get older, you just think, yeah, I am living this amazing life, but it's possibly at the expense of becoming a mum. And so many people ask me, did I put that first, or did I prioritize my career? And I feel not. I feel like during that time, I just didn't meet anybody that I had a strong enough connection to settle down with. So, after a year in Budapest, I thought, I'm going to phone a fertility clinic and start investigating the possibility of doing this on my own, because more than anything, the one thing I knew was I didn't want to miss out on becoming a mum. At the same time, I didn't want to settle down with someone just because I wanted to become a mum, because I thought in the end that will probably be harder. You know, it might give you what you want in the short term, but in the long term, I'm sure it would cause a lot of problems. So yeah, so I phoned a fertility clinic. They told me to come down for an appointment. I organised to come the next month for an appointment and was quite surprised how quickly it all sort of happened from there. During the appointment, they said, okay, you can start on your next cycle. And that's what I did. So I decided to have IVF. Because I lived in Budapest and I was travelling back to the UK, it was just easier to plan IVF and the timings. And I also just wanted to give myself the best chance statistically for my own mental health, not going through, you know, so many potentially failed cycles. And yeah, so I did the IVF and had three embryos as a result of it. I transferred the first embryo and that didn't result in a pregnancy. I took a bit of time to sort of come to terms with that and just get myself back feeling strong again. And then I transferred the second embryo and that is now my daughter, Daisy.
Wow, gosh. And it's terrible with these things, isn't it? Because we kind of speak about it quite pragmatically now and quickly, you know, like this is nutshell talking. But so much would have been happening in that time, like for you physically, mentally, emotionally, all the people around you. And, you know, it's one thing making decisions ourselves, but it's also, I don't think that we need to make decisions based on the impact that it has on other people. However, there is going to be an impact on other people. So if I can bring you back to, like, where did you find out about becoming a solo mum? Because, you know, we are immersed in the fertility community and it is a fertility community now that really does exist, which is amazing. But I think I'm probably right in saying it wasn't quite as significant when you were going through this. Like, do you just kind of almost, you know, one of those things where you think you've come up with an idea and then you realise actually loads of people have done it before and then you're not surprised. But, you know, but how did you come up? Did you know someone who was a solo mum already? Where did that come from?
Yeah, you're completely correct. I didn't know a single person in real life who'd done it or any celebrities or anyone in the public eye. So at that time, I had no idea of anybody who'd done it. I didn't know anything about it. Honestly, the only thing I did is Googled it. And the only things that came up on Google were the clinics. So I just contacted a clinic. And, you know, it said on the clinic that they treat single women. So I went into that first consultation literally knowing nothing and relying on the clinic to inform me. I desperately wanted from the clinic to be connected with other women, which of course they couldn't do, like they can't give you any other people's names, because I was looking round the waiting room thinking, well, they're sitting on their own. Are they doing it on their own as well? But I mean, quite possibly they were just not with their partner at that time. And so although I've got amazing friends and family who were super supportive, I didn't know a single person who had done it or was considering doing it. And to be honest, that's why I started the Stork and I. So I thought that if there isn't a community, then let me start one. And as you say, now things are quite different and there is a much bigger community and there's lots more information available to people. But it definitely did feel like I was one of the first people doing this. And of course, yes, now I have found a lot more people who have done it, but ever more growing that are considering or on the journey to do it. So yeah, I did. It was the clinic was the main source of information, which I don't think is right. I think you need to get information before you go to a clinic, in my personal view.
Yeah, well, the more information from all different sources, that's the key, isn't it? And that's for everything and throughout pregnancy as well. And I spoke to Julianne from Parenthood in Mind just a couple of episodes ago. And that was one of the things. It's like this onion, this layers of information, and some of it's medical and some of it's friends, some of it's family, some of it's emotional. You know, we really need that whole, all of those layers of support, we do. And it's amazing that you have created the Stork and I, and we will come on to that in a moment. Just still back with the decision making. Now, I'm going to make an assumption here. Tell me if it's a really, really annoying assumption that people would make. When you were thinking about it, was there a whole, I'm going to do this. No, I'm not going to do this because I might meet someone tomorrow and settle down and have a baby. I'm going to do this. No, I'm not because I'm going to meet someone tomorrow. I can just imagine like that whole decision-making process. And am I jinxing a possible, you know, like 50-year marriage around the corner, or like what did that look like? Am I crazy thinking that, or?
No, it's exactly like that. So, I talk about almost like a cycle that you go through. So it started off with almost like blind belief that I'll meet someone. You know, of course I will meet someone. Everyone eventually meets someone. I was trying. I've been on, I don't know how many dates, internet dates. So it wasn't like I was sitting on my sofa hoping to meet someone. I was out there trying to meet someone. And I did keep thinking, this is something I could consider, but of course, let me first of all see whether I meet someone. And then, you know, I would meet people, but just not for a long-term relationship, or that didn't want children, or, you know, who weren't ready to settle down, or at least with me, they weren't ready to settle down. But it's really difficult to let go of the hope that that is what will happen, because that is what is embedded from us that will automatically happen. So I would say most people, not everybody, there's certainly people who don't think that, but the majority think that they'll meet someone, get married, have children. And it's quite deeply embedded in us that that's what will happen. And that's what the fairy tale is portrayed in society. So it becomes very difficult to let go of that idea and to think that something will happen in a different way. And it was when I got to 37 and thought, even if I meet someone today, by the time I've got to know them enough to feel ready to try for a baby and then tried for a baby and then the 9 months of being pregnant, I'm still going to be older than I thought I would be when I had a baby. And that's when I just decided to make the decision to go for it. And I just thought to myself, it's just doing things in a different order. I absolutely would still love to meet someone. I really do think I will meet someone, but that doesn't have a time limit, whereas having a baby unfortunately does. So that's why I just decided to finally make the decision. But it certainly wasn't easy. It took me years, honestly, of thinking about it before I really made the final decision.
Yeah, I can imagine. And hearing you talk about that, it mirrors so much of what goes on with any fertility journey. And it must have been that grief, you know, the grief and the letting go of this concept of this, you know, like happily ever after with someone else. And you're right, so many of us, that's instilled in us that that's what's going to happen. And it is that process, as you mentioned, of realizing that that isn't necessarily always the case, and then letting go, which is a grief process and a grieving process, which then allows you to move on to the next step. I literally posted something on Instagram this morning. It was a story that I shared, or a post of someone else's that I shared. And it was about how you are allowed to feel sad, even though you've just made the right decision.
Yeah.
And that just feels really relevant now, actually.
Yes. And it absolutely, it was grief of letting go of the idea about how I thought it would be. And the thing I think that is critical is then starting to embrace a different path equally as positively. So what I realise is it's different, but it doesn't have to be worse. And I think that's what a lot of people struggle with, that they presume it will be worse and they almost look for things to reinforce that it'll be worse. And what I really do is try to embrace the situation I'm in and look for things to make that situation the absolute best situation it can be for me. So I think that's what I've learned to do.
Brilliant. So you have made this decision, like this is happening. Where are your friends and family in that? Where are your parents in that? Like, are they, what you said actually, that they were very supportive. Was that an immediate, yeah, whatever you want to do, Mel, we are here? Did some people, because again, it's sometimes it's our families and friends, well, it depends how close you are with your friends, but it is your, sometimes it's their grief as well, isn't it? and dealing with that, and not to say that it's our responsibility to deal with it, but if these are people we love, you know, we do get involved in that, don't we?
It is, and that is definitely something that can be difficult. So for me, my mum, who's my main supporter, was like, absolutely, you know, I think you should have already done it yesterday, sort of thing. So she was like completely on board. And, you know, let's talk about realistically what help I can give you, and, you know, having an honest conversation about how involved she could be in it. So my family were sort of like, I mean, of course you're doing this because you don't do anything in the traditional way, but, you know, in a nice way. So the vast majority supportive. Friends, again, they knew that I'd been dating and had done everything in my power to, you know, to meet someone and couldn't, and didn't want me to miss out on motherhood, you know, any more than I wanted to. So were supportive. Some people did have hesitations at first, not in a negative way, more in like a questioning type way. And it can feel frustrating because you think, I just want you to support me because I need support going through this. I don't want to have to support you. But it's like you say, actually, it's not our responsibility. But if you want to bring people along with you, then if you support them to just unpack anything that they're thinking about, I find that helped. So then all of my friends were completely on board, my best friends. In my entire friendship group, I had one person who is really not in agreement with it. And, you know, unfortunately, we don't talk anymore because he felt like if I made that decision, it would impact our friendship, which is really sad. But again, I just think everyone's entitled to their view. And if that's someone's view, then, you know, unfortunately, that, you know, they're not in my life anymore, which is sad. But I think, you know, out of everybody I know, having one person, I think, you know, the vast majority were completely supportive.
Oh, I'm so pleased to hear that. And I know that people listening, and I know that this has happened myself. For me, it was literally after I'd had Ren that there are people that we are going to end up falling out with, and friendships that don't make it. And that is incredibly sad. But, you know, like you say, it was one in so many. For me, fortunately, it was only one in so many. So it's amazing that you have got all of that incredible positive support around you. And that's 100% what we all want to focus on. So the only other thing, I guess, thinking about that kind, that point of your journey, is you mentioned that you rocked up at the fertility clinic and they were like, bang, let's go. Like, is there no counselling? Is there, because you had a donor sperm, and I know, I don't know the intricacies of this, I'm sure you will, but when you have donor IVF now, certainly, and maybe this has changed over the years, you do have to have, I think that it's called an implications counselling session, don't you? It's only one. I think it should be way more than that personally. And I always recommend people to go and receive counselling. It's something I've done all the way through. But yeah, that's a little bit frightening that there wasn't, that they didn't encourage or offer any counselling. Has that changed since?
So I did have a counselling session. I did have the implications counselling. So I think I organised to go in and they did it all in one. So I think you have blood tests, you have a counselling session, you have a session with a consultant. So I feel like I went in going to gather information about what would happen and had all of those things. And then the consultant at the end said, okay, so, you know, then this is the situation, we can go on your next cycle. And it's so difficult to remember. I mean, maybe that was split into two separate sessions. I'm not 100% sure, but it felt very quick. So I definitely don't want to do the clinic a disservice because I think they went through all of the correct processes. It's just that I think if you've been thinking about something for 3 years or however long, then you go to the clinic and it's almost like, okay, this is how you do it. You are ready to start if you want to. You're a bit like, oh, wow, okay, I'm doing this. For me personally, I actually needed that. So I've been thinking about it for so long. I was like, oh, okay, then what's stopping me from just doing it then? So I kind of just went along with it. They certainly didn't put any pressure for me. If I hadn't been ready, I could have said, no, let me, I need to wait and do it at a later date. In terms of the implications counselling, I have asked my community about this because I have very different experiences. So my personal experience, and I've had counselling for other things, is that it wasn't a counselling session. It was a do you understand? It was an implication session. Do you understand that this will happen, that will happen, etc. It's a very difficult situation for solo mums because you feel a little bit like you're being tested to check that you are going to be okay to have a child on your own. And as much as there's like a reassurance that that isn't the reason for the session, it feels very difficult in those sessions to say, I'm really worried about whether I'll be able to cope, as an example, because then you're telling the people who are giving you treatment that you don't know if you'll be able to cope. So it's quite a difficult situation to have proper counselling. What I always recommend to people is that they, outside of that clinic setting, have further counselling or coaching on any particular area they want to go into more detail on, so it doesn't feel like it's associated with the process, if that makes sense. So it's definitely available. I would just say the difference, I've got such different opinions from different people. Some have said the coaching was, the counselling was amazing. Others have felt a little bit more like, you know, do you understand what's going to happen, which was how mine was. But honestly, after 3 years of considering it, I felt like I'd done all of the thinking I needed to do.
Yeah, absolutely. You were ready, 100%. And just, you mentioned about how you went to IVF. I guess the alternative might have been IUI, which is somewhat less invasive, but doesn't necessarily have as good success rates. So
exactly, yeah. And just because of my age, because I was traveling abroad and I wanted a little bit more certainty on the dates of when you can control it a little bit more when it's IVF, and because of the success rates, I decided to go straight for IVF. And because with IVF you can potentially and hopefully create more than one embryo, so it gives you the opportunity to have another transfer, which is what in the end I did have. So that was sort of my rationale for doing that.
Yeah, absolutely. And having had the first round and receiving a negative, like, that is heartbreaking, because it's not, you know, this is months and years that has gone into this. And then the second round, how quickly afterwards did you have that? And how did you feel when it was actually real and positive?
So I waited about 9 months, I think it was, in between, because I didn't feel, I know a lot of people just want to get straight on to the next one, but for me personally, I don't know, I just didn't feel ready. And so I, yeah, just had a bit, quite a long break. And then I remember saying to my friend, you know, should I go and have another transfer? I mean, it seems like a really good time in my life to do it, but is that a good reason to do it now? And they were like, yes, when else would you, like, what are you talking about? If this seems like a good time, then go and do it. And so I just went and did it, and didn't tell many people, actually. And then I remember I was in Budapest in my apartment, and my best friend, just by pure coincidence, was visiting that weekend. And I took the pregnancy test when she was there. Now, I am a nightmare for pregnancy tests. So I literally, I think it was after like day 6, maybe day 7, I'd waited to. And so it was like the faintest positive. So she was like, oh, well, let's wait and see, because, you know, so then the next morning I tested and it was darker, and she was like, well, you know, let's still wait and see. And then the next day I was like, no, this is positive. I'm not waiting. We're celebrating that this is positive. So and then, of course, I took about, I don't know how many more pregnancy tests right up until the day when the clinic had told me to take the pregnancy test. So at first it was hard. I didn't really celebrate because I was sort of like, is this definitely going to happen? But then, yeah, after a few days, I was like, oh my goodness, this is actually happening. And yeah, just super excited.
I bet. And did that last throughout your pregnancy? Were you excited and positive? Were there anxieties? Were there anxieties, I guess, about the pregnancy? And then I can only assume that, you know, you're kind of like, oh, this is actually going to happen. Is this the right thing? How am I actually going to, you know, the kind of reality of it, I guess, sets in.
I think that does definitely happen to a lot of people. And I've spoken to loads of the people I coach when they get the pregnancy test. They're a bit like, I've only thought up to this day. And now all of a sudden I'm thinking about it and there's panic. For me, I think I'd considered it for so long. I didn't feel any doubt at that point. But I know that that is common. But for me, I just didn't have any doubts because I feel like I'd worked through them all beforehand. I think that one of the things I found is I live my life, and I always have done, at a pretty hectic rate. And I didn't change that at all throughout my pregnancy, to crazy levels, to be honest. So I moved on my own from Budapest to London, I started a new job in London. I bought a house in Manchester that needed renovating. Every weekend I got the train between Manchester and London to oversee the renovation of my house whilst trying to do this new job in London. And so I had no time to think about how everything was. I was just like, head down, let me make all these things happen. And for me, like, that's just how I like to do things. I wanted the house ready for when my daughter was born, and it was. So yeah, I didn't really have time to think about it. I just went with it. And, you know, I was very lucky because, yes, for the first 3 months I felt a bit rubbish, but pretty much throughout most of the pregnancy, I felt quite fine. So I remember ripping up carpet from the attic before the new people came to fit the carpet, like when I was, I don't know, 7.5 months pregnant. So yeah, I just went for it, basically.
That sounds like extreme nesting to me. Very, very impressive. And you mentioned your daughter. So did you find out during your pregnancy what you were having?
Absolutely. I am a huge control freak, and I just do not know how people can wait for a surprise. I was like, tell me what the sex is. So on my 20-week. No, it wasn't my 20-week scan. I had the blood tests that you can have, and because of my age, and those blood tests tell you the sex. So I decided to find out the sex so I could plan physically, but also mentally. I think it helps you plan a little bit.
And that is, it's horses for courses, really, isn't it? There is no right or wrong. Do whatever you feel is right for you. And then the baby arrives, little Daisy, as we now know. Talk to us about, you know, the birth, you had a birthing partner, I assume. Was that your mum? How did you get through, like, say, the first 6 weeks, maybe, of newborn life? Because the sleep deprivation is wild, isn't it? Like, I know that is a sweeping statement. I'm sure there are babies who are amazing, and perhaps Daisy was one of them. But I know that, like, me and my husband having that support and that tag team was invaluable. Tell us about your experience of that.
Yes, I can confirm Daisy was not one of those babies. She was absolutely a child that didn't want to go to sleep. So for the birth, my mum was the birthing partner. I have a very close relationship with my mum. I wasn't at all nervous about that. The only discussion my mum and I had is usually I'm almost like the one in charge, and she needed to be the one in charge, and I was just checking she was okay with that. But she was, and she was brilliant. She, I think if I remember correctly, she moved in with me a couple of days before, but actually I had an induction booked, so we knew when it was going to be. So it was a really long labor. They were inducing me for ages, I think, you know, more than 48 hours. And then in the end, after quite a long induction and nothing really happening, I then all of a sudden got quite a lot of pain, and they said they just couldn't see it happening naturally. It was going to go on for a long time. Did I want to consider having a C-section? And at that point, I was in so much pain. I was like, yes, now, please. So I had a C-section, and I was in hospital, I think, for 3 nights because both Daisy and I got an infection. And I was dying to go home by the end. And my mum stayed with me. We planned for 2 weeks. She actually stayed for 10 days. And I said, yep, you know, I'm okay for you to leave. I remember sitting on the stairs with Daisy saying, bye then, mum. Thinking, oh my God. but I kind of wanted to see what it was like on my own. Like I wanted to experience it. And she kept on coming back. But so I did that first night on my own. And yeah, it was really hard. Daisy just only wanted to sleep on me, which I think is very common. And so I was really, really tired. And things seem worse when you're tired, you know, as we all know. So, but the big support I got was from my mum. She would give me at least one, if not two nights where she would come and stay. And the deal we had is that I did the nights, but then she would get up early and let me sleep in the morning. And to be honest, she still does that now once a week, which is fantastic. I was very adamant not to be constantly thinking, what would it be like with a partner? I haven't got a partner. So I very much was, in the words of Lucy Sheridan, staying in my lane. This is my situation. What are the options of how I can make this easier for me? I went and stayed with friends. A lot of my maternity leave, I would be staying with other people or people would be staying here. So I felt like I had a load of people around me helping me. So yeah, I think it was, you know, how many women find it tiring. But that, you know, I found ways to cope with that.
Yeah, absolutely. You do, whatever your situation, like you say, whatever lane you're in, you do manage, don't you? And whatever that looks like. One of the things that I was thinking as you were talking there is my mum is wonderful. She's got four children. She's got six grandchildren. And then, you know, or she had six grandchildren before Ren turned up. So now she's got seven. When we had Ren and bought her home, and for those who are listening perhaps for the first time, I had Ren with my husband, Bob. And so we were both together here. But I wanted my mum there in some ways, but equally I kind of wanted to work it out by ourselves, you know, that kind of thing. And I remember, and people who have listened to the podcast, you know, lots of the episodes will have heard me say this before. My mum came in, and I actually want to point out that both of us are talking from the luxury of a non-COVID world. And that is something that I am going to come and ask you in a minute, Mel, about kind of people going through this now. But this was pre-COVID, so people could come and go as you pleased. My mum came in on the day that we got home, and I say that she got us to ground zero, because I'd been in hospital for about a week or so, and she got us to ground zero. She did five loads of washing, got it all dry, put away. She tidied the house from top to bottom. That meant that Bob could look after me. He went to Tesco's, got food in and everything. And that meant I could look after Ren. And that was wonderful. But after that, we did kind of ask for our space. And if I was going to do it all again, which I hope that I can do it all again, although it will be a different situation, we did the whole didn't really invite anyone around for a couple of weeks. I don't know if I would do the same thing again. You know, it is, again, it's one of those things. It's everyone is different. But with my mum in particular, I didn't want her to take over. Like, how did you manage that? Maybe you didn't feel like that. Maybe that's just me. But how did you feel about that?
Yeah, I actually didn't feel like it. And I don't know whether that's my relationship with my mum or whether it's because I haven't got a partner and she's playing sort of a slightly different role. One of the things I would say is I had an incredible relationship with my mum before. Now it's just like the best relationship ever because she has helped me so much. Emotionally, practically with childcare, practically helping me with the house, like everything. I thought maybe she would, like, I'm just going to say, I thought maybe she'd frustrate me, and it just hasn't happened. And I think that I need her now. I didn't need her. I was living abroad. She would come and visit me. Like, I didn't need her support with stuff. Whereas now I really do need her and rely on her. So that's changed the dynamic of our relationship for the better. And it also means that, I can't really think of any times I've got frustrated with her. She is welcome anytime because she gives me way more support than I would say some people's partners give them, quite frankly. So, I'm lucky in that situation. And actually, I've spoken to quite a few solo mums who have said, I'm thinking about moving in with my parents. Like, am I mad? Is that going to be a nightmare? And on the most part, people have had a really positive experience because as much as there may be frustrations, the benefits far outweigh it when you haven't got another person to support you. So I think maybe some of it is to do with being a solo mum and some of it is just my relationship with my mum.
Yeah, I can imagine that if I had done it on my own, that my mum getting involved and her practicality and knowledge and everything, that she would have been the first person that I would have gone to for sure or been with. So I totally agree with that. I guess it's just some of its different situations, isn't it? So we're in lockdown now, and you talked about how you spent a lot of your maternity leave visiting other people coming to you. There are solo mums out there. I know that I have some solo mums in my Hangout community, in fact. And because of the opportunity of bubbling, there is some support, but there isn't that wider network. And that's the same for everyone who is having a baby around this time. How are you supporting, or what are you hearing, I guess, from your community about how they're managing in that situation?
Yeah, and I mean, I don't want to dress it up. It's really hard. It's so hard for someone who's had a baby in this situation, or even people who've had children previously and now are trying to cope. What's really difficult for the solo mum community is all of the advice I give is around how you set up your support network so that you're not missing one person, you're gaining a tribe of people who are all there for you. But at the moment, that's just not possible. So thank goodness they have allowed this bubbling, because I can still see my parents who have been phenomenal, but that's at the expense of seeing my friends. And my friends are my family. I think when you've lived abroad, you develop with some people a different relationship because your family isn't there and you really do become more like family. And it's been so difficult not seeing them because I would spend all my weekends with them. We would go on holiday together. Just so much time I would spend with them. And that's how I plan to do it. So the solo mum community are, the positives are people have said they've learned to spend more time on their own, and I'm definitely included in that. So I feel better at being able to spend time on my own, which I think is good. We have made the most, like everyone, I suppose, of remote support. So I've had lots of Zoom calls. One of the funny things is, I've been a lot more sociable with some friends because they're also now in on a Friday and Saturday night, whereas previously they probably wouldn't have been. But yeah, it's hard. And all I can do is plan in my head what's going to happen in 2021 and hope that it will be slightly easier.
Yeah, absolutely. And so much of what you've said, I'm sure it has carried through Daisy's kind of lifetime so far. But talk to us, I guess, we can't go into all of the detail. Tell us about some of the highlights and tell us about some of, and I think you've probably touched upon a lot of the challenges or some of them, but give us a couple of highlights about it and the challenges.
So highlights are the time that we have spent with my family and my friends, seeing her interact with my friends' children, seeing my friends really step up and playing, particularly like the male role model side of things. So I'd spoken to some of my friends about, you know, considering the role they play for her because she hasn't got a father in her life, and seeing them really taking on that role, supporting me, letting me have a lie-in. So the amazing efforts of my friends and family, and also knowing when I'm struggling, because I'm not the sort of person who easily says I'm having a hard time, and people just knowing and being there for me. So the love and support that I've got and the relationships with people has been fantastic. Seeing Daisy develop as a little person and seeing her personality come through, and she's so funny, has been amazing. And also myself, how I've developed personally and how I've managed and juggled things, and the absolute amazing connections I've made with other people in this community who are thinking about doing the same thing. And just really feeling like I did things differently, but it wasn't worse. It wasn't better or worse. It was just different, and really embracing my own personal situation, I would say, were the highlights. The challenges, honestly, she's like two, nearly three, And for anybody who has a child that age, you know, the same challenge probably most have, you know, we're going through a challenging development time for her. And being the only person to deal with it, you know, I was talking about my frustration and my patience, and, you know, my patience bucket is quite low because I haven't got that other person to tag team with. And previously, I would have had friends and family to do that with, for different reasons, and mainly COVID. That's not really happening at the moment. So, yeah, just trying to keep my energy dealing with, you know, the 2 to 3 year old challenges is probably the most difficult thing at the moment. But it's a phase, and, you know, everyone goes through it, and it's just me thinking about how I can, you know, get those energy levels filled back up, really.
And a lot of that, whether, I don't know whether it's a good thing to kind of normalize it, or whether it's frustrating for me to say, yeah, I hear you. But like, a lot of parents are going through so much of that, solo, single or otherwise, aren't they? Because of developments, because of COVID, because of all of that.
I think it's really good to normalize it, because I keep on saying, is this really normal? Like, is this what everyone's child is doing? But I don't think people talk about how difficult it is to manage that transition. So, yeah, and I agree, no matter what your circumstances, it's challenging. And we've all just got to put mechanisms in place that work for us to try to support us, really. And I just pray that 2021 makes it that we have more people in our lives that can support us.
Oh, I know, we're all feeling that. There are some benefits, and I think we've all learned so much and to appreciate different things during this time. But yeah, I want to give someone a hug. Do you know what I mean? Other than Bob, I heard someone say the other day, I want to hug someone that I'm not married to or haven't made. And I thought, yeah, I know what you mean. As wonderful as it is, yes, I hear you. So you mentioned that you had 3 embryos. One didn't stick. The other one is Daisy. And you've got one in the freezer, presumably. Where are your thoughts around whether or not you're going to use it?
It's a really tough situation, actually, because what I don't want to do is almost like go back to the beginning thinking, if I had a partner, you know, because that's right back to the beginning of the cycle. In an ideal world, I would love to use it. I always thought I would have 2 children. I just think, because of my age, because of COVID, because of, you know, many things personally for me right now, I don't feel like I'd be able to manage. I think I would be making my life incredibly difficult. My parents are, you know, I think 72. They already find it, you know, quite tiring helping me with Daisy. So yeah, as much as I would love to, right now I probably think that I'm not in the position to. I definitely haven't closed it off. So, you know, it's still very much there and very much, you know, it's still a consideration. I can't come to terms with saying I'm not going to use it. But yeah, and there's moments where I think, shall I just do it? Shall I just see? And I know a lot of solo mums who have had 2, and, you know, they're incredibly happy. But yeah, I feel like I would struggle.
It's so interesting hearing you say that, because drawing the parallels between us, I'm 42, we've got one frozen. It is almost selfishly that I ask people in similar situations to me, because I don't know what we're going to do. And if it was 2 years ago, if it was 5 years ago, I'd like to think, like a shot, we would have kind of put the embryo back in. COVID definitely has impacted that decision as well. And one of the things that I find really frustrating about this, which I think that you will absolutely understand, as will many of the listeners if they are in similar positions, is for us, when we're going through fertility treatment, we have to go through a pretty huge decision about whether or not we're going to do it. And then we have to see if it works, you know? And that is one of the things actually that's biting me a little bit at the minute, because if it was a decision that it was going to work and you were going to do it, like, that's a different decision almost, isn't it?
But we have to get over the hurdles of deciding that we're going to try, and then we have to wait and see what happens and deal with those hurdles afterwards.
I've also thought about that because I've got one embryo. So if I came to the conclusion I was going to use it and then it wasn't successful, then I wonder, I can say in my head, oh, I'm going to try, and if it works, it works. If it doesn't, it doesn't. But if I've come to the conclusion I'm going to try, is it then going to open the floodgates to be like, okay, but now I, you know, now I want to sort of try again sort of thing. So yeah, it's a really tricky one. I'm pretty sure I'm just going to keep on paying for storage, and then maybe when I'm 50 be like, okay, probably I'm not going to do this because it's too hard to make a decision about it. It's hard.
I am sitting here nodding my head at that totally, although I hadn't considered what you mentioned about, is that then going to open the floodgates? Because as far as I'm concerned right now, although I always say you can't really make the decisions until you're in that situation, is that we are not having any more IVF. And like Bob, categorically, that is off the table. And I feel totally comfortable with that. It's just because we've got the one frozen. But yeah, I hadn't considered if it didn't work. And then, oh my goodness, stop. You put ideas into my head, Mel. Oh my God. So what we're going to talk a minute about the amazing community that you have established and created, and your podcast and all of the show notes. You know, we won't go into loads of those details. All of the show notes will lead you to everything that Mel does. And it is incredible the amount of support she provides. But last week, we had to put this interview off because I got tonsillitis. It happened overnight. Monday, I was totally fine. Tuesday, I was, without being dramatic, feeling like I was at death's door. I could not do anything. I couldn't get myself out of bed, let alone wake Ren up. I could barely call the nursery to ask them if they would, you know, have her for longer. You were in my mind a lot during that time because we had to postpone this interview, and I was thinking about what would I do if I was a solo mum in this situation. And rather than necessarily, I think so much of what you've covered already tells us, you know, like it is the support network and making sure that's there and really thinking about that. But as someone else who might not be the immediate support, like how can we best support our friends who are solo mums?
I think one of the main thing is asking them what you can do, because the thing that I've learned is everybody is different. So some people say they want their friends to know how to support them. And I have to say, I've been there where I'm like, why do my friends not know that I need support on this, this, and this? Well, the answer is because they're not mind readers and they're living their own lives. And just because I've decided to do something doesn't mean that suddenly everyone's going to know that I want something very different to what I used to want from our friendship. So I've realised that it's my responsibility to direct people on how they can best help me. I think people can suggest stuff. You know, so if someone said to me, do you want me to come over and I'll do the morning shift? I'm definitely not going to say no. But other people might not want their friends to do that. So for me, a lie-in, if someone can take your child in the morning and let you lie in. When I used to go to my friends pre-COVID, PC pre-COVID, they would get up in the morning and take Daisy, like often with their kids, or if they've not got kids, just have her for me. That was the best gift anyone could give me. And then the other thing, but again, everyone's different, is the socialising. So people presume I want childcare. I often don't want childcare. I want friendship. I want my friends to come and socialise with me. So come round to my house, have dinner whilst Daisy's in bed. So there's the what support can you give practically, but there's just being there as a friend and making sure that I don't feel isolated is one of the real big things for me as well. But the main thing is communication, just talking about, people put on a brave face, a lot of people, if you're quite independent, and you know, this changes that quite a bit. So it's really just trying to understand what do they really want for help.
Brilliant. Thank you so much. And for anyone listening who is considering the option of being a solo mum or is pregnant as a solo mum now or parenting, where can they find you and what can they find when they get there?
So basically on Instagram, what I try to do is almost like a day in the life of. So I document, you know, the highs and the lows, and I try to make it without compromising Daisy and her privacy. I try to make it, you know, a balanced view of the great things and the things that are difficult. I don't want to sell a dream that's not reality. So sharing a day in the life of. And then I offer group coaching for a group of women who are considering solo motherhood to talk through all the different aspects of it over a 3-week remote coaching course. I do the same for pregnant solo mums. So we have a 3-week remote coaching course for people, exactly what you said, Kat, where you've got that pregnancy test and then you're like, oh, this is actually happening. I need to talk through some things. And so we get together and go through that. And then I offer one-to-one coaching from just a one-off session about a particular topic, or I do like a support package where from someone who's considering it to going through the treatment, being there, supporting them throughout it. For people who really don't feel like they have got anybody to support, I'm almost like that supporter for them, having regular coaching sessions throughout their journey. So yeah, that's the main thing. I've got the stalkandi.com is the website which goes through all of those things.
And you've got your podcast there as well.
I have. I also have series one is on the website, and I've just also recorded series two. So that's going to come out in January.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me today, Mel. Honestly, I think that you are an absolute powerhouse and you have my utmost respect. And I wish I was in Manchester so I could pop round and give you a lie-in one day, maybe.
I wish you were too.
But thank you so much for joining me and like a huge congratulations on Daisy, gorgeous Daisy, and on everything you do, because it is so needed and it's just incredible that you're the one providing it.
Absolute pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much. Take care. Bye-bye.